Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I remember like being so upset because, you know, that straight away the contract I had with the cricket club I was playing for was cancelled. So like I wasn't earning any money or doing anything, and I thought my life was like over. I was 20 or 21. Right. But it's so weird how that then led to what I do now full time, and I'm so lucky to be able to do. It's just strange how things come out of different situations in life.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Balancing Acts. In this conversation, I talk to YouTube prankster Josh Peters. Perfect. Hi, this is Steve Whiteley, comedian, actor, filmmaker and writer, all-round ADHD creative. And welcome to my new podcast, Balancing Acts, where I talk to an array of creatives ranging from comedians, actors, directors, all sorts. And we talk about how they find a sense of balance or not between their creative lives and their everyday lives and how that has an impact on their mental health and beyond. Balancing Acts is now made in association with The Comedy Crowd, who are a website and community that support independent comedy creators such as myself. I have a Comedy Crowd short, which is a 2-minute video, one of my characters on their website. They showcase the best new videos on Comedy Crowd TV, which is comedycrowdtv.com, and across media platforms, so do go and check them out. Josh runs his YouTube channel with partner in crime Archie Manners, and they currently have 1.3 million subscribers. They have recently fooled the likes of CEO of Big Cat Rescue, Carol Baskin, into believing she was giving an interview on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. They flew Katie Hopkins over to Prague for what she thought was the Campaign to Unify the Nation trophy. But alas, it stood for something else. In another video, Josh and Archie also pranked 40 social media influencers into believing they'd received a piece of moon rock from the National Space Center. And not content with that, they went on to create a fake restaurant, the Italian Stallion, to sell microwave meals as authentic Italian cuisine via Deliveroo. Needless to say, these stunts have got millions of views. Carol Baskin interview is on 6.6 million views. The Katie Hopkins stunt, which is probably their most infamous one so far, is on about 6.8 million views. So it was great to sit down with Josh and discuss his whole process, how Archie and him met, how they decided to go into partnership together, and how they brainstorm their ideas and decide which ones to go with. But becoming a YouTube sensation wasn't always the original plan for Josh. He'd intended to become a professional cricketer and had actually travelled to London to take part in a cricket tournament when he came down with a bout of glandular fever, which forced him out of cricket, and he was dropped from his cricket team. And it was then that Josh decided to pivot and focus on creating YouTube videos with his best friend, Casper Lee. And what started out as just mucking around and doing sort of song challenges eventually turned into what you see today, which is these extraordinarily intricate, well thought out and well planned, clever and funny pranks or hidden camera stunts. And what started initially as Josh's YouTube channel has now turned into a partnership with Archie. And I was really interested to speak to Josh about how that transition occurred and, you know, what that was like for him, you know, having built this channel all by himself to now decide to go into partnership with Archie. And Josh basically explained that for him, collaboration is key. You need to have that friction, you know, somebody who might agree with your idea or just as importantly disagree with your idea, and together you can come up with maybe perhaps an alternative or better solution. Josh breaks down the range of emotions he went through during the whole Katie Hopkins escapade and how he managed to get over them. You know, there was part of him that obviously felt sympathy and sorry for her, but then as soon as she opened her mouth and she started coming out with this hate-filled speech, I pretty much all of that was forgotten. But it leads on to an important point where Josh emphasizes that it's important to punch up rather than punch down. Josh also talks about his love for sport and how important it is for his mental health. He talks about how if a video doesn't go the way that he was hoping to, or if it doesn't receive the amount of views he would have liked, how that can affect him and how that's something that he's trying to distance himself somewhat. But obviously it's very tricky when it's something that you've created, and I can obviously, you know, I'm speaking from experience myself, and you release it online and it doesn't go the way that you intended it to, or doesn't receive the attention or the views or the love, then it's a disappointing feeling. So we talk about that. There is loads here. I think you're going to really enjoy this. It's a fascinating conversation, just hearing Josh and Archie's process, how they go about creating this. And it's clear to me that, you know, he's a super smart and industrious guy who's still, you know, early in his journey as a performer, as a creator in the entertainment industry, and is going to go super far. So without further ado, over to Josh. Perfect. Where am I speaking to you from now?
I've got
a tower in the background, and you sort of, it looks like you're a high-powered exec from this view that I've got you right now.
With the AirPods and everything.
Yeah.
No, so this is my, I mean, it's not very tidy, but it's my bedroom, and then it's got this awesome, like, little, it's like a little window thing, so I just put a little seat in it, and I say I put a seat in it. I've lived in this flat like 3 years, and I'd never had anything in the space. And I got a girlfriend at the end of last year, and she put the window seat in. So I'm making use of her window seat. But there's a great light in here as well. So it's just
it's very flattering. I will say that.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's looking good. So just kicking off on that, you moved to London. Is it 4 years ago from South Africa? Is it around that sort of time?
2015, but I'd lived here for 6 months in 2013, because before I did anything in entertainment, I was a cricket player. So I used to play semi-professional cricket, and I played a cricket season here in 2013.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And then did you move over for permanent reasons due to what you were doing with sort of YouTube stuff? And did you just want to go all in?
No. So very crazy, weird story. In 2015, I came over to do another cricket season. And as it so happens, I was friends from growing up with Casper Lee, who was already quite a big YouTuber at that point, but we'd been childhood friends forever. Because of that, when I was in the UK, I'd always see him and hang out with all the YouTubers. Now, in the 2015 cricket season, I got glandular fever really early on. Just shared a cool drink with someone. I don't know how it happened. It was crazy. And I had to miss the rest of the cricket season. So with nothing to do and like 6 months in London, I started making YouTube videos, and it turned into a YouTube channel and somehow a career. And then by the time it was time to go home, I had like enough money to get a deposit to rent a flat. So I was like, fuck, I spent all my money on doing that. And it luckily carried on. And yeah, here we are. Years
that's
later.
Crazy, so isn't it? That's crazy how fate takes shape, you know, in terms.
So you, weird.
You basically, you owe your career to glandular fever.
Also, yeah, I mean, I remember.
Never had it prior to you.
Yeah. I remember like being so upset because, you know, straight away the contract I had with the cricket club I was playing for was cancelled. So like I wasn't earning any money or doing anything. And I thought my life was like over. I was 20 or 21. Right. But it's so weird how that then led to what I do now full time. And I'm so lucky to be able to do. It's just strange how things come out of different situations in life.
Yeah, I guess it's how you react to it, and you sort of took a proactive approach.
Yeah, I mean, I think with anything in life, a lot of fortune and like luck involved, but you've got to sort of take that chance when you get it and try and make the most of it, I think.
And when you kicked off with your YouTube channel, the content that you were creating wasn't what it is today, right?
That's putting it really nicely. Yeah, thank you. So I mean, I was still very new to it all. I knew how to edit. I knew like the skill of an editor. I mean, I wasn't very good, but I knew how to do it. And I was very fortunate in that I was part of a group of guys who are very popular in the UK. I call it like the boy band era of my life, where we could create quite, you know, pointless, just fun videos, and they'd do very well. It was, guess the song challenge or whatever it was. And look, it was really fun, and people enjoyed it. But I think as I got older, I started not enjoying doing that so much, and the people perhaps who were watching also probably got sick and tired of it. So I think it became time that I needed to start changing into something new. And thankfully, I'd acquired these skills on how to create a video, how to speak to a camera, and that helped me create the kind of videos that I'm able to create now.
So when you were living, that makes complete sense. So you were living with Casper, and as you call it, your sort of YouTube boy band buddy, and this was in your early 20s. You must have been having the time of your life.
It was. I mean, still so lucky that I got to be able to experience that. Casper and I both grew up in a small town in South Africa. So we were like living in London and getting to experience so many crazy things and meet so many interesting people and just have so many experiences that were really cool. And it was just these two kids for us who, you know, we'd been friends since we were 12 years old in a town with a population of like 100,000 in South Africa. And now we were in London together. It was, and we still actually live together. He's in the next room. So for me, that's just the most awesome thing.
Yeah, I mean, that it makes it so much more enjoyable if you're doing it with your friends, as opposed to, because, you know, I'll write scripts or whatever. And sometimes I've talked about this recently in the podcast. I've recently come to the conclusion, actually, no, I just want to collaborate with people because it's just more fun, isn't it?
It's so hard, I think. I was reading this book the other day that spoke about how it's impossible to have proper creativity or proper learning if you're just thinking on your own, because you really need someone to conversate with in order to develop an idea. Because if you're just having your own internal dialogue, you're kind of just having your own like biases form an idea or form a thought. You're not getting that like other side of something that you really need. You're not getting that friction that you sometimes need, I think, to create the idea or come up with the thought. And that also, I've been so lucky in that I started working, I'm sure you would have seen, with a guy named Archie Manu. In early 2019. And he is just such a great guy to work with. He's a magician by profession. So the way his brain works in terms of like creating dual realities and making tricks basically is so fascinating, and I've learned so much about that, and I'm sure you would have seen in some of our videos a lot of that comes into it, that sort of making someone think one thing when actually something else is happening.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get on to it, but Katie Hopkins would be a prime example of that. So you referenced a book. What book was that?
It's called some people might know, it's called 12 Rules for Life. But a bit of a controversial guy. His name's Jordan Peterson. He's a clinical psychologist. I mean, yeah, like the guy's got some pretty controversial views on certain things, which are some things that I don't agree with. But his book, I would highly recommend reading that book, 12 Rules for Life. It's really interesting. A lot of interesting stuff in it. And just, I found that particularly interesting, how hard it is sometimes to develop a thought if it's just you, as opposed to having someone to create some friction with or to disagree with you so that you can come to a better outcome.
I totally agree with that. And particularly if you're doing something which is comedically inclined, you know, it should be an enjoable process rather than sort of bashing your head in the wall. So how did you and Archie meet?
So I had seen some stuff Archie had done online called Archie Asks, which was where he would like go to different things. So he went to Wimbledon and interviewed people and said, you know, how do you feel about Andy Murray getting Jacob Rees-Mogg in the next round? Are you excited to see this? And people would sort of go, yeah, I can't wait to see Andy beat Jacob Rees-Mogg in the next round. That kind of stuff, which was really great. And I always thought he was super funny. And we met up and didn't work together at first. We made a couple of videos together and I liked working with him. And then we made a few more. And then he came on and sort of worked 2 days a week for me, kind of informally, and stuff started doing really well. That began in early 2019. And towards the end of last year, at the beginning of this year, after the Katie Hopkins video, we kind of sat down and came up with a partnership together where we've come together. And now you'll see my YouTube channel is called Josh Peters and Archie Manners, and we're both invested in it, and we both work super hard in it, and hopefully it'll continue to do well. But yeah, he's a super talented guy and great to work with.
That's very cool, because I can imagine, like, if you know, you've created this YouTube from scratch yourself, you could have a tendency to be like, oh, this is my thing, you know, like from an ego perspective, this is my thing.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody else involved. So that's pretty great that you were able to sort of take a step back and realize actually it's going to be more beneficial and enjoyable to have you both on board together. Was there a yeah. struggle coming to that conclusion, or did you just like, nah, this is the way to go?
I think we both wanted that to be the outcome, but obviously, you know, it's not just as simple as that. There was obviously loads of stuff that had to be discussed, and it was hard. Like, I could just sit here and say I don't care, but obviously it was really hard to add a name to something that I'd made over so many years. But I genuinely believe he makes me better and makes that YouTube channel better. And I think the value he adds is justified in adding him to the channel. And I truly believe that he wouldn't be able to do it without me, and I wouldn't be able to do it without him. It's a really symbiotic partnership we found. And I think that's so rare to, you know, you get these duos sometimes, and I hope we've stumbled upon one, and I don't think it should be ruined for the sake of, you know, an ego or whatever. Hopefully we can make this partnership into something more than just a YouTube channel. That would be the hope. You know, who knows? We might have a huge fight and never talk to each other again in 6 months. But
what is the grand vision? Is that something that you set out early doors when deciding to go in together?
You know, we haven't put down on a piece of paper we want to rule the world.
Rule the world, yeah.
10 years or something. But our dream would be to continue doing the stuff that we have been doing, with working on developing something for TV at the moment. That would be our next like step. Mm-hmm. Is trying to do something successfully on TV. I think there have been a lot of people who've come from YouTube and tried to make that transition, and it hasn't gone so well. And I think it's incredibly tough. So I don't want to underestimate how hard that's going to be.
Why do you think that is? There is that sort of stumbling block making that transition from YouTube to TV.
I think it comes down to there's so many different things it could be. I think in some instances it's that the person might not be just subjectively entertaining to your random person. It might be that they've developed an audience who understand them and they're entertaining to that audience, but to a sort of just random audience that perhaps not as entertaining. I also think at first TV commissioners really thought that if you put someone with millions of followers on TV, the millions of views would follow, but I don't think it works like that.
No.
I think the platforms are sometimes more powerful than the creators, if that makes sense. You know, people are on YouTube, they see Josh Peters, oh cool, I'll watch Josh Peters, but if I wasn't there, they might watch someone else. So then, you know, they might not go from YouTube to TV just to watch an individual person. And then also I think it's, you know, it's hard, man. It's like talking to your phone like this, or just holding your camera, you know, that's one thing, but trying to come across as natural as you normally do when there's you've got a sound you've got a mic on you and there's this camera there and that camera there and someone's saying, okay, now action or now do this. Mm. That is a skill that people practice and learn and take a long time to get good at. And I think it shows sometimes if you're just going to throw someone in that maybe they're not natural at doing that. It's, you know, it's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but you know, you are, that's a skill set that you've been building over time with your videos. And I think what's amazing about, you know, the development, what you've been doing is just sort of like the production value is just like, I've just looked at what you're doing. It's like how, I mean, the amount of time it must take for you to come up with, firstly, like how do you sort of go about, what does your brainstorming sessions consist of in terms of how you decide to come up with the next idea?
So it takes a long time sometimes. And like before, when I was making more trivial videos, I would always upload one video a week, like kind of no matter what. You know, I'd do anything to get that video up every week. Whereas now I give myself, you know, if it takes 2 months to make a video, it takes 2 months to make a video, but just make sure it's good. So the brainstorming is always me and Archie somewhere, whether it be just like going to a coffee shop or just throwing ideas at each other. And generally it's when one of us will say an idea to the other one and we'll both go, okay, yeah, that's good. But a lot of the time we'll say, what about this? And then the other one will say, no, but what about this, that, and this thing? And that's what I mean about like having two people, because sometimes we'll have an initial idea that will turn into something so different, but it would never have obviously come without that initial thought. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a lot of just, as I'm sure you know, just head banging against the wall and hoping something comes, and a lot of reading current events, looking, also taking inspiration from, you know, people who've done similar stuff before us, like Brass Eye and Sacha Baron Cohen and all these kind of.
I had written people, Sacha Baron Cohen down. I was like, I was going to talk to you about potential inspirations, because I can really feel that kind of his essence coming through.
Yeah, he's,
where you're heading now and what you've been doing recently.
Thank you. Yeah, that's he's probably my favorite person in this genre by far. I've watched just about everything I think that he's done, and he's just he's something else, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, it's everything he's done is just gold, isn't it? In that respect, are you sort of going the direction that you're going into now? Is there sort of like a, I don't know whether it's subliminal or not, is there now an intention to have is there a point that you're making, or there's something that you're trying to say with the pranks that you're doing going forward, or is it on a case by case example?
So the kind of like by mistake theme we stumbled upon that seems to have worked for us is, it started with a video. I don't know if you saw, we bought a bunch of eggs from a supermarket, quail eggs, and we put them in an incubator, and one of them hatched into a real quail that is still alive now. And it's had its own baby quail. So we're grandparents now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So that, I guess, theme is asking a question and then creating a video where we explore whether something's possible. So like, is it possible to hatch a supermarket egg? Film the process, and if it succeeds, that payoff is then just so good, and then you have a good video. So I guess, yeah, if you had to nail it down into a theme, is asking if something's possible. You know, if we played on Katie Hopkins' ego enough, could we get her to fly to a different country and accept an award? If we did this, could this happen? Mm. And that was very much something that we stumbled upon, but we kind of recognized it after that quail egg video and try to run with that. And there's another one we did where we sold microwave meals on Deliveroo.
I love that
from my flat.
It's like you guys were a professional outfit. I would have bought from you.
Yeah. So that again is that, like, you know, is it possible to sell microwave meals from my flat on Deliveroo? I don't know. And honestly, neither of us ever know. And I think that's the most important thing, is that seeing that genuinely come across on screen, that we don't know if it's going to work. And we filmed a bunch of videos that haven't worked. Because when it does work, you can't match that reaction. Like, you can't fake that.
Yeah.
You can see that it's like, you know, when we saw that the restaurant had been listed on the app on Deliveroo, we were like, what? This is crazy.
And I have to ask you, Have you got the same lawyer? I mean, your lawyer is
Was
it the same really guy every good. Time?
Yeah. He's we always, you know, it's expensive as well, and these videos are expensive to make, but it's definitely worth doing. You know, you've got to make sure what you're doing is safe, and it's we try, and now when we make these videos, because there's so few of them and they're such kind of big projects, we always try and get a brand involved, which helps.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, because I noticed you had Quidco, didn't you, on the I Trick the World with the fake Ed Sheeran.
The Ed Sheeran video, yeah.
Yeah, and Castify as well for the
Castify, yeah.
Castify, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
How does that come about?
So I've got an agent who represents me who can bring in deals, and then also just through like my inquiries email, we always try and work with a brand that, you know, is in some way realistic for like my YouTube channel. It's an integration that we can say thanks to so-and-so for sponsoring this video. It wouldn't have been possible without them, because it literally wouldn't have. And then incorporating their product in some way. For the Castify one, it was actually super fun. The video we did was we convinced reality stars that they were on a TV show, but it was actually just an interview with me and Archie, and we were making them say all sorts of weird things, like leaving your fridge door open can help combat global warming. And we then told them that the sponsor of the show is Castify, which was true. Mm-hmm. So we asked them to hold up the phone case and just do a read to camera about Castify. So in that case, we got the people we were pranking to do our brand deal for us, which was quite fun. So we always try and make it at least a little bit entertaining.
Okay. So essentially those brands are covering the production costs for you. Go on.
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I don't make anything from it. Obviously,
of course.
It's a business. I need to eat. So, when I'm lucky enough to get a brand to sponsor, a lot of the money is spent on the production of the video, but if I can, I will obviously try and make some money as well.
Of course. And prior to you getting brands on board, was it just a case of reinvesting revenue from previous videos into the next productions?
Yeah, man. I mean, that Katie Hopkins video, like, I don't want to say how much, but it was like, for me, a lot of money to put down on something that might not have worked.
So what's your mindset during that period? Were you anxious? Or are you like thinking, what's she cons on?
So nervous. You know what I was dreading as well was, because she's got young kids, I was waiting for her to walk in and go, "What the, my kids watch you," or like something like that.
Yeah.
I was so scared. But the moment she walked in, because we'd rehearsed so much and we'd practiced so much and talked about every kind of possible thing that could have happened, it all went so well, luckily. But like, you know, she could have got ill, or she could have like missed her flights, or anything. But it was an expensive video, but thank goodness it worked.
I mean, you know, your previous videos popped, but that one I feel just took things to another level in terms of exposure, because it was everywhere.
Yeah, that was I had to really pinch myself. I mean, I had like messages from people that I really did not ever think would know that I existed.
Really,
you know, tweeting, and like I think Stormzy retweeted it, and like all these like Jack White or people I've idolized for a really long time.
Ed Sheeran. I'm obviously referring to the fake Ed Sheeran video,
No, but it was, and it's really surreal, just an incredible thing. And like, I felt like it was, for me and Archie, quite a hopefully like defining bit of content for our hopefully longer career. But it was crazy.
It was amazing, incredible stunt to achieve. are there any times where you ever feel bad for your subjects? Or are you kind of like, I don't know, you're sort of, your mindset is at a point where you're just like, well, this is business, this is work for me?
So I think it's a really good question and a really important thing to always keep asking yourself. Obviously, the harshest thing we've done by a long way is the Katie Hopkins video. And I think in that case, it was justified. And she pointed out how justifying it was by giving that speech she gave at the end of the video. I think it's very important always to be punching up and to have a reason for what you're doing. Some of the other videos we've done, which have kind of been around individuals, you know, it's celebrities, it's people who make a career out of the media industry and are doing pretty well. And we try and always keep it lighthearted to an extent. It's about having a laugh and making a joke rather than having someone say something that could ruin their career or putting them in trouble. You could argue that the Katie Hopkins video was something that, you know, that was pretty serious stuff. But I think she was someone that warranted that kind of hit going on her.
Yeah, I think there wouldn't be many people that disagree with that. It was interesting because, you know, you get to the first half of the video and there may be a small part of you that's sort of having a degree of sympathy.
Yeah.
But as soon as she opens her mouth and she starts that sort of hate-filled speech, you're just like, yeah, no, you've got this.
Well, that was the crazy thing is, like, you know, especially with the world we live in now, everything is so, you see one clip of something that is supposed to be what that entire thing is. You see one clip of a protest or one clip of a whatever, and then in your mind, that is what that entire thing is. And with Katie Hopkins, for example, when, you know, she's a really capable person of being nice. And when I was speaking with her, she, you know, she's a pretty normal, nice person, but then some of the things she says are just absolutely insane. But when I was with her, it is a bit like, oh my God, this is a real person. Like, you know, this is not just this evil figure. This is a person who's got loads of stuff about them and is a real life person. So you do have to, yeah, it took a bit of like gritting my teeth and holding my stomach. But I did feel pretty justified in what we'd done when she got up and made her speech, and also some of the things she'd said to me sort of in, like, when cameras weren't rolling. I'm not going to repeat them now, but, like, yeah, she's just pretty vile. Perfect.
Hello, sorry to interrupt in the middle of this insightful conversation, which I'm enjoying, I'm sure, just as much as you are, but I need to give you guys a little reminder. If you like this conversation, this episode, if you like balancing acts in general, then please do subscribe to us, rate and review us, because it makes the world of difference. And the more reviews we get, the more rates we get, the more people can discover the podcast and we can make it go viral, whatever that means. Okay, back to the chat. I can imagine that in itself is challenging, having to, you know, have a sort of straight face while you're hearing kind of whatever horrendous stuff is coming out of her mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that occurred throughout the speech and you're going to you have to stay in character.
Yeah, that was where we were also lucky that, like, you know, we went on a prog casting website and just try to find the best actors we could, obviously a month or two before, and we managed to find majority South African actors. But, like, I was expecting them to be pretty bad. They were unreal. Like, they spoke to her. They were fully in character the whole night. They were had, like, anecdotal stuff to talk about from South Africa. They were brilliant. There were so many little things that came together in that video that made it work, which was, you know, part of what I was saying earlier is that everything I believe in life comes down to a bit of, like, half luck, half putting the work into it.
So give me break down, like, what would what would be a typical day when you are, like, knee deep in that pre-production period? That sort of, are you just literally working all out from morning to night?
So how it started, the original idea was because I always go back to South Africa in December to see my family, we were going to get her to fly out to South Africa to present her with this award. But as it turns out, she's banned for hate speech from South Africa.
Okay,
yeah. And we only, you know, we didn't expect to get a reply from her at all, but we did. And then it was followed up by that. We're like, oh crap, we're in South Africa now. What are we going to do? So we then organized for it to be in Prague at the end of January. And she said that was fine. So we had, like, I'd say 3 months of, you know, like, we weren't sitting in an office working every single day, but it was a pretty constant correspondence of organizing actors, organizing a hotel, organizing flights, putting a friend of ours on the flight with her so that he could take, like, say, yeah, she's on the flight, and take some photos of her. Obviously, we didn't want to be on the same flight as her because just we didn't want to risk her seeing us there and then seeing us again later. So many little things. And Archie as well, with, you know, we both worked super hard on that, but he's really good at, I guess, from being a magician, making sure that every detail is thought about, because I guess if you're doing a magic trick live, you have to be prepared like that and be ready for any kind of problem to occur and adapt off it or deal with it.
Yeah. And do you, when you're sort of going through that whole period of organizing pre-production, is it basically just you and Archie, or have you got sort of production assistants working with you guys as well?
It's just
you guys.
Yeah.
Wow. Because it's just, like, you're doing, like, it's effectively like a TV sort of logistically sized production.
That's
insane. I assume you had this whole team of people working with you. Wow.
For the shoot, we brought a camera guy with us. He was also, like, you know, you sometimes hire a freelance camera guy, you think, well, might not be the best. Sean Rowe, he was just brilliant. Like, the way he captured everything, everyone who helped with that video was unbelievable. But yeah, aside from, it was me, Archie, and Sean Rowe in Prague.
That's amazing, man. I wanted to ask
and the lawyer.
And the lawyer, let's not forget the lawyer. The lawyer is the vital component there. I wanted to ask you about the Ed Sheeran prank. And obviously you had, for that prank, there was a load of YouTubers who weren't in on that. What was was there a reaction or any fallout from YouTubers? Did you know, were you sort of, do you have a personal friendship with a lot of those guys that were, I guess, pranked to a certain degree in that video?
Yeah, so the majority of the British YouTubers towards the end of the night started figuring it out because it's the accent.
Yeah.
He's from Manchester. And Ed Sheeran's from, he's from, where's he from? The West? Where's Ed Sheeran from? Somerset or something like that, I think.
Yeah, I think it's around that. Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, he's definitely not from Manchester. And they also could see that he was kind of with me and they knew me. So, you know, a lot of the British guys started figuring it out. The Americans had absolutely no idea. It was really fascinating to see because, you know, like, you're at this party where there's just, like, not party, this backstage thing where there's, this guy's got 10 million followers and that girl's got 20 million followers and whatever, whatever. And normally you'd kind of feel a bit out of place at that kind of party. Well, I would, I don't know. And because they thought we were with Ed Sheeran, all of these mega stars were, like, gravitating slowly towards where we were in the room. Like, you know, we'd go and have a drink at this table and you'd have all these people quite subtly just, like, moving slowly closer and trying to sort of just have some way of starting a conversation with Ed Sheeran or having a drink with him or something. It was a very interesting, like, social thing to observe. And it makes you kind of appreciate how crazy life must be sometimes for someone that famous, and especially obviously when we were outside with everyone, how just mobbed he got. And I mean, that's his everyday life, Ed Sheeran. I don't know if you'd want it. It was pretty crazy to see.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Although I wouldn't have minded receiving the text about the Lamborghinis and the Ferraris.
How crazy was that?
So casual. If you want a Lamborghini or Ferrari for a few days, hit me up.
It was at the fight. So we took a fake Ed Sheeran to a boxing fight, and at the boxing fight, little did we know there was this French guy sitting near us who took note of the fact that Ed Sheeran was there, and he was a club owner in Los Angeles. And when we walked straight into this exclusive club, as you do when you're with Ed Sheeran, he stopped me at the door, and he was like, "I thought it was, like, game over. He's gonna, you know, say you need to go. This is Ed Sheeran." He was like, "Bro, if you need a Lamborghini or a Rolls Royce, hit me up in the next couple of days. It's on me." I was just like, "What?" Unfortunately, we were flying back the next day, so I couldn't take him up on that. But
okay, next time. Unreal. Next time.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I really enjoyed the Tom Holland interview. I thought that was
thank you. Yeah,
it was very amusing. And how do you deal with? I mean, there must be times where you feel like you're going to corpse. but you managed to keep a straight face. For me, that if I was, I was thinking about myself, if I was in that interview, I don't think I would be able to keep a straight face.
Yeah, I was so nervous. I think that helped a bit. But like, because he's such a nice guy as well.
He seems such a lovely guy.
Such a nice guy, yeah. If you didn't see it, we did a prank where I was interviewing Tom Holland for his new movie, and I had my friends Casper and Connor in the next room telling me what to say in an earpiece. So saying things like, "Is that really what you're going to be wearing for this interview? Wow, that's brave." So it was stuff like that, and it was just it was mortifying. But to keep a straight face, I don't know. I think I've always just been okay at it. I just clench my stomach as hard as I can. The only time I've corpsed in a video, we cut it out, was in the Reality Star video where Haley Hughes said, to combat global warming, we shouldn't just leave our fridge open because that would make the house smell. We should get another second fridge and leave that one open to cool the planet down, and we can keep the one with the food in it closed so that the house doesn't smell. And when she said that, I actually lost it. I pretended I was having a coughing fit and just walked out of the room.
Do you think she's actually sort of like secretly deeply intelligent person who is sort of having everybody on?
No. That was quite something. Really lovely girl, and super entertaining to watch. The way she, even just everything about the way she speaks, is just interesting to watch, like that accent. And yeah, she's brilliant for TV. Maybe just needs to do a bit more reading or something.
Yeah. Wow. And how was the experience interviewing Carol Baskin?
Yeah, that was also obviously super nerve-wracking. I luckily didn't have to say much because I was pressing the buttons, pretending to be Jimmy Fallon. Archie had to speak to her as the production assistant. But we'd done a couple of other videos with that same device, so luckily we were quite rehearsed in it, but also just nerve-wracking. But she was so nice.
She seemed amazing. Go on.
Yeah, she came out after the video and said, I thought it was a fun prank. They said they would include my charity call out, and they did, so I'm more than happy. So that's awesome.
It was just also what was impressive about it is that there was other actual legitimate TV shows that had reached out to interview her who didn't get the interview, and yet you guys did.
I did. Yeah, it was also one of those again that, like, when we were like, "Shall we email Carol Baskin?" We're like, "Yeah, it's not gonna, nothing's gonna happen, but
yeah,
you know, might as well try." And then next thing we knew, we got a response from Howard Baskin, so it was just too good.
Wow. So going back to sort of when you were younger, did you do much performing? Have you gone to drama school or anything like that in the past?
Yeah. I mean, I did at school. I mean, our school system works a bit different to England. I did the equivalent of drama A-levels. So until the end of school, my favorite things at school were drama and sport. And it was kind of a toss-up between whether I would go and study performance and do drama at university or whether I'd pursue a career in cricket. And I chose cricket, and then somehow ended up having a career in performance. Interesting how that works. I've learned, so much about it's such a hard thing. I've got so much to learn still. But just being lucky enough to be in this world, I've gotten to meet so many people and work with so many people who've taught me so much about it. And I really am lucky for that. And hopefully I can keep learning and keep doing good stuff and keep doing well in entertainment, because it is such a tough field.
Yeah, you've just got to, I think half the battle is just working hard, and it seems like very apparent that you guys have got a serious work ethic.
And it's that, it's also just like, there's no reason for things not to work sometimes in entertainment. You could be making you could make something really good and it just doesn't work, and there's no like reason for that. It just happened to not get shown to the right people or whatever the case may be, which is, it's so frustrating, isn't it? And it's just like, but yeah, that's just entertainment, I guess. So it's a weird world.
That's actually what I wanted to touch upon next. How does it affect you then, sort of mentally or in the past, when you have spent a load of time working on a video and it hasn't had the desired effect or impact? It's just sort of like when you were sort of at an earlier stage in your career, would it knock back your confidence, or was it sort of, or did it just sort of like give you more determination? Just like, all right, I'm going to make sure the next one works.
Like, I wish it didn't affect me. Like, I know how stupid it is to let that affect me. I'm a pretty stoic, I guess, like atheist.
Have you always been that way inclined?
Kinda. I think since I was sort of a teenager, yeah. And I know how like pointless, you know, numbers on a screen are in the sort of grander scheme of my life. But it still just does for some reason. You know, you always end up checking it. I really try not to let it, but I will be in a better mood if a video is doing well compared to if it's doing badly. And I just can't, you know, maybe I'll get better at managing that one day, but it's just, yeah, I suppose it's impossible to detach yourself fully because it is like your work, you know?
Of course.
And you have a direct feed to how well it's doing. I do sometimes wish I'd just like go and take a break from any kind of Instagram, YouTube, anything for a year. But at the same time, I love what I do and I'm so lucky to be able to do it, but it's just such a, you don't want to just be sitting there like looking at numbers and stuff. You feel like a crack addict sometimes. So I try my best, but it is hard. And I think everyone, not just entertainers, but I think everyone can relate to that in a way. In the sort of way we live nowadays.
Yeah, totally. And do you get phased at all by any negative comments on videos?
Like the odd comment, no, because I know it's just like a person saying something for the sake of it. If it's like a lot of comments about a specific thing, yeah, I'd probably take notes of it and try and figure out what the problem was. But I think you've got to look at, I think I've worked it out. It's like 1% of the views on a YouTube video are comments. You got to think like the 1% of people who are commenting, you can't really take them too seriously. I think.
Yeah, that's a mature approach. Have you been like that? Were you like that from the beginning when you first start releasing videos, or is that something that's developed over time in terms of how you deal? And
I've always tried, but like obviously I was way more insecure. I still am insecure, but like I was way more insecure when I first started making YouTube videos about what people thought of me and how I came across. Obviously the longer I've been doing it, the more comfortable I am with myself and how I sound and how I look and being on camera and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But people have a nice way of always finding your insecurities and pointing them out to you. So you just got to ignore it, I think.
Just ignore that stuff. Yeah. And we touched upon before hit record about sort of imposter syndrome. Is that something that you sort of did suffer from now?
No, I just, you know, I was very lucky in the way I got to start on YouTube. I got followers quite quick. The first sort of 100,000 people that followed me came pretty quickly. And I know a lot of people have had to work a really long time to get to that point. Or, you know, it's unfair in some ways that I got that starting block. But as I say, you get chances in life and you've got to just do everything you can to take them. And I hope that I have done that. Like, you know, I've done my best to turn it into something good. And I hope I've done that. But yeah, you sometimes feel a bit like, you know, I got a bit of an unfair advantage with that, but what can you do?
Yeah, I think everyone has got their own. I mean, from performers or, you know, actors or whoever I speak to, everyone's got their own insecurities going on. And a lot of the time it's sort of like more, it can be internalized. What other people's perception of somebody is isn't necessarily what they believe it to be.
You're worried about what you think someone else is thinking.
Exactly. Yeah, that's something that I'm only just starting to really realize myself, you know. And so what do you do? So when Josh is not doing the YouTube,
What do you do to relax and unwind? What's your thing?
I still love sport. Such a big part of my life. I think exercise is so important for anyone who's struggling with their mental health or anything like that. I still believe that exercise is the best thing you can do. So I've been doing a lot of running lately, play quite a bit of golf. I've actually been getting into my gaming since the lockdown. I used to play a lot of games.
Okay.
So I've been doing that again, but like computer gaming. So there's this game called Dota you probably haven't heard of, and Age of Empires I've been playing. Okay. So yeah, a little bit of that. But sport, yeah, I'm super excited for the lockdown to be lifted for that, to be honest. Can't wait to get on a football pitch again, or a hockey field or a cricket pitch, and just play some sport.
Yeah, I've been substituting by doing sort of these if you had Insanity or any of those kind of like high intensity training programs.
Yeah.
I'm sort of one of those madmen you see in the corner of the park jumping up and down and shouting and just gritting my teeth, thinking I'm some
you
kind
get
of
your
like,
shirt off.
Yeah, I did it once and then I immediately put it back on again.
Everyone ran away.
I mean, it was a very crowded day and I was right in the center of the crowd. And then realized in hindsight, it wasn't the best decisions. And I know we touched on Jordan Peterson. Are there any books that you kind of think of that have had a big impact on your life?
I read this book as well called Happy by Darren Brown, which I really liked. Don't let the name put you off. It's not like a self-help book. It's just a book about sort of exploring what it actually means to be happy and content with yourself, and you know, the difference between enjoying a holiday or buying a new phone compared to what it genuinely means to be happy. It's really interesting. So many, I think anyone who reads it will relate to it a lot. And he just points out so many, you know, you're reading something and you're like, oh my God, that's so true. I've never actually properly been able to think about that. I like a lot of what's the word for them? Non-fiction. Factual?
Yeah, factual, yeah. Non-fiction. Yeah.
Non-fiction, that's, yeah. They're quite hard to like get through because there's no obviously story or anything, but I do enjoy it.
I'm also big into those as well. I used to read a lot of fiction, but I find it, I don't know, increasingly more difficult to read fiction these days. Not because it's got shitter. It's more my sort of inability.
Some temptations to watch stuff, probably.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. No, so are you a big binge watcher of things?
I can be, but to be honest, no, like not too bad. Like I get into stuff, but I'm not too bad. I get a bit, you know, if I've watched two episodes of something, I feel like a bit, I need to get up and do something.
I'm the same.
But I can play games on end, which is bad. I can play like quite a few computer games in a row, which is not great.
But I guess at least it gives you some sort of sense of feeling that you're doing something.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's competitive and it's like, it's good. But yeah.
Okay. All right, man. Well, look, it's been great speaking to you. I'm going to ask you a final question. I ask all the guests that come on the podcast. What does the idea of balance mean to you or not?
The idea of balance. I think the idea of balance to me would be having a good career while still enjoying my life. That would be the idea of balance for me, which I think I can do to an extent sometimes. So try and stick to that.
Brilliant. Okay, man. Well, look, great speaking to you and thank you so much.
Perfect. Thank you, Steve. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me. Perfect.
And there we have it. Josh Peters in the building. Not literally in the building. We are still abiding here at Balancing Acts by the social distancing rules that no one really understands or really implements anymore. However, that conversation was another of the Zoom chats and very much enjoyed chatting to Josh. Hope you guys enjoyed that as well. And if you did, as always, please rate and review the podcast would be most appreciated. And what else can I tell you at the moment? I'm reading a very interesting book called Radicals, which looks at different pockets of society that are doing things in a radical way, such as the transhumanists. You know about those guys? The guys that are trying to implement technology so that humans can last forever. And I found it very interesting because what is supposedly a radical and liberal concept could actually be interpreted as actually something quite conservative. Because if we, like us, our generation, or just everyone that's alive right now, last forever, then how are we going to have new concepts and ideas? Because all the people that are currently alive are just going to have just the ideas and thoughts that, you know, are attached to us and our world right now. Anyway, I digressed there a little bit, but I recommend that. I'm listening to the audiobook version of that. I usually struggle with audiobooks, but because sometimes I just feel the narrator's tone or voice just sort of punishes my ear hole. Whereas this narrator, who I also think is the author of the book, is pleasant, very pleasant to listen to. Yes, so that's Radicals by Jamie Bartlett, and very much enjoying reading that. And I can't remember if I talked about it before on a previous podcast episode, but I polished off Dave and I absolutely loved it. The little sitcom with the little Dickie, that is just very funny, all round first class sitcom. So do go and check it out, yeah? It's on BBC iPlayer, so if you haven't seen that one yet, worth watching. And I've started now to work in my co-working space, and there are arrows on the floor which show you which direction you have to walk in, so you avoid bumping into other people that no one is paying any attention to, and there's complete havoc, and everyone's going in opposite directions and trying to swerve each other, and it sort of turns into this intricate choreography piece. So it's an interesting experience there at the co-working space, but it's definitely nice to get out of the flat because I was going a little bit crazy. So yes, it's nice to be around other humans and seeing things slowly unfold until we get back to normal ways in society and forget this ever happened. It's sort of like COVID, what? What was that? Oh, yeah. I think, a couple of months, we were sort of just staying and just like binge on Netflix and eat loads and hoard. What about the hoarders? How are you? If you were a hoarder, how do you feel right now when you went out and you panic bought and you decided, this is it. This is the end of humanity. It's the end of civilization. So now I must go out and purchase untold amount of bog rolls. Okay. Well, that is all for now, and hope you're all well and good and fine and dandy, and until next time, see you later.
Balancing Acts is now made in association with The Comedy Crowd, who are a website and community that support independent comedy creators such as myself. I have a Comedy Crowd short, which is a 2-minute video, one of my characters, on their website. They showcase the best new videos on Comedy Crowd TV, which is comedycrowdtv.com, and across media platforms, so do go and check them out.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.